It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
California Wine Country, Dan Berger is here, and our guest today is Don Hoffman. Among many other things, he's a partner and winemaker in Rockville Cellars. Don, good to see you again, buddy.
Nice to see you, man. Nice to see you. Thank you for inviting me.
And Rockville Cellars is a pretty new winery, right?
Yeah, we were just bonded in summer of 2018. My partner and I have been making wines together for a couple years, but we made it official.
Cool. Rockville Cellars. I like the name. Of course, I was born in Rockville Center, Long Island.
Oh, no kidding.
So it kind of attracted me to it. But where does the name come from? Is that the vineyards the wines are being made from? Or?
Well, it's a small area next to Fairfield called Rockville. It's not an official zip-coded market, but it sits between Fairfield and Green Valley, California. And it's rocky. Our soil is above the Suisun Valley floor. It sits in between Green Valley and Suisun Valley. It's about 750 elevation, and it's nothing but heavy, big stone red rocks.
Nice.
Monstrous rocks. So it gets a name. The minute you put a shovel in the ground, you know exactly you're in Rockville.
And the wines from that area.
Yes, we have estate-grown wines, grapes. So we have Cabernet, Cab Franc, Pinot Noir, and Sauvignon Blanc. But we also make some other brands like this Sir Pig that you have in front of you, which is a rosé that's made from Grenache and Cunoy grapes.
Cunoy.
Cunoy, exactly.
We don't hear that name often here on this
Very
segment.
Fancy. It's very fancy, if you will.
It's a very light red wine grape, makes a floral white wine. It's very difficult to handle because it oxidizes quickly.
That's a beautiful rosé.
Thank you. It's called Sir Pig.
And why?
I was a farmer kid. I still am. Still raise almonds with my father and my sister. They used to call me Piggy. I was in 4-H. I raised pigs. They used to call me Piggy, and I used to say Sir Pig to you. And so when I needed to create a brand that we could do quickly to generate some revenue for the winery, because you can't just rely on four-year-old vintages of Cabernet when you're just starting out. So we created this particular brand, Sir Pig, created a rosé, and then this year we mixed it up. Our 2019, which I'm not sharing with you today, is a rosé made from Tempranillo, so it's unique as well.
Your history is fascinating, and I want to get into this again, which we did, I think, when you were here. You're a wine closure expert.
And That's right.
I love that, and I want to talk about that.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough. So I'm an ad guy. I'm an ad and marketing guy. I was a creative director coming out of college. And one of my first accounts 25 years ago was this little startup company out of North Carolina called Nomacork. And Nomacork today is exclusively the largest producer of corks, green corks that are made from sugarcane-based biopolymers, and about 30% of the market in that. And with that account, our company became Vinventions, and we bought a screw cap company, a natural cork company, and a micro natural company. So the combination of those. Vinventions, yeah.
That's a great name. Yeah.
So I'm the director of wine quality and the director of sales for that company. And the first one to be director of sales that's actually a winemaker first.
Very cool.
Oh, by the way, I brought something for you. Speaking of closures, I brought you some recycled Nomacork closure straps for your face mask.
Oh, nice. So
it makes for great radio, but these are made from recycled Nomacorks from a company in Germany called Biologic, and they are to help keep your mask on the back of your head without hurting your ears.
That's wonderful.
That is so cool. So your thoughts on this rosé, Daniel?
Well, it's very dry. I mean, there's not a trace of sugar. The aromatics are sort of earthy with a faint trace of peach or some kind of a stone fruit. And what's really nice is it's really aimed at going with food. It's so dry, it needs to have some food. It'd be tough to drink this on a patio, but it's really lovely.
Maybe with an ice cube and a red cup.
With an ice cube, there you go.
I find it delicious.
And you're
right.
My glass is empty.
The earthy part?
Yeah, I love it.
Oh, I get that.
I like
that. Oh, that's good.
And it's unfiltered. So we've got what you guys are not seeing on the radio is that it's got a good, nice sediment in the bottom of the bottle. When I ran a test trial through the filter process, I almost lost all my color. And so I didn't like that. So I said, you know, this is going to be a coarse filtered, as they say, coarse filtered wine. So I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, I really do.
Fun wine.
By the way, California Wine Country, as always, brought to you by Bottle Barn in Santa Rosa. Rockville Cellars started in 2018, Sassoon Valley, California, not far from Napa.
Technically speaking, it's about 11 miles, I think, from the heart of Napa Valley. Just around the corner. I say it's one hump over. It's one, you know, because we have Napa County, the Vaca Mountains, of course, you know, straddle Solano and Napa County. And there's some great wines that are grown up on the Napa side of that ridge.
Mm-hmm.
That are Napa-oriented. And so Sousson Valley, if you took the back road beyond Silverado Trail, you can drop into Sousson Valley very easily. And we're right there at the north edge.
You say Sousson, the rest of us say Sousson.
How do I say it?
Sousson.
Sousson. Sousson.
So, I'm sure you're right, because I mispronounce everything.
Well, so. I grew up kind of terrorizing Sousson Valley.
Then you would know.
My grandmother, I have a Swope label here in front of you, Swope Family Estates.
That was my next question, because the brands coming out of Rockville Cellars these days, Sir Pig, which we just talked about, Swope Family Estates, and Swope is named after your grandmother.
Yeah, that's correct. So my very first commercial wine, I was very fortunate to team up with a winemaker at Rock Creek, not to be confused with Rockville, but at Rock Creek out in Green Valley. He said, what kind of wine do you want to make? And I said, well, I think I want to make a Tempranillo, because I think I want to approach it differently. And I found some grapes about 900 yards north of where my grandmother's buried in the Rockville Cemetery. Her last name is Swope. They were migrant workers. They moved here to Sousson Valley to pick fruit. And this is a tribute wine. The Swope label is a tribute wine to those migrant workers that Steinbeck made so famous.
And talk about Tempranillo. What exactly is that?
Tempranillo. Dan, you'd be better off describing that variety. But
native to Spain, central part of Spain. And it's a red wine grape that can be fairly soft, because it has a very high pH when you harvest it, so it's very tricky to harvest. You have to harvest it really carefully, and then when you finally get it in the winery, you don't want to mess with it too much, because it's a little difficult to handle in terms of...
Temperamental.
Temperamental, yeah, you want to say it. Sort of similar to... It's a cousin to Pinot Noir in that temperament. It makes a really nice, simple red wine. It can be complex. The Spanish like to age them for 2 years before they release them. How long has this been in
this is aging? This is the 2017 vintage, and this is a fire vintage. So this is where we made the wine, and it's stopped 80 yards short of our winery. The fire, as you remember, that particular weekend, I harvested grapes on Saturday and was out of the winery for 6 days without touching it. So it went through a fair amount of immediate natural carbonation, if you will, kind of initiated the initial fermentation. So it's a little lighter on the skin for sure. And I used neutral barrels. And I try to just let the variety speak. That's not very complex. It's just kind of easy drinking, 13% alcohol wine.
Assuming it's a blend.
No. Tempranillo is a noble variety.
It's just Tempranillo. Okay, yeah. Okay.
But that's not what's in your glass, just so we're clear.
Okay, what's in the glass?
In your glass is a carbonic macerated Merlot from
2019.
Okay. All right. Oh, a Merlot.
And it's from the Swope label, so it's because it comes right up the road from Mancus Corner. And if you don't mind, at Mancus Corner, we have a couple of great merchants. The Mancus Cafe is a great group of people that opened up a restaurant there on the corner. And then across the street from there is a place called the Filling Station. And my longtime family friend, the Filling Station, is a place where there are wineries just like me that don't have tasting rooms per se, and there's a lot of wines there to taste. Wine and beer, it's a great stop. It's a great hangout.
You know, anyone who's been listening to this show for 12 years knows how big a fan I am of wine labels. This is one of my favorites ever, this wine label.
Wow, thank you. That's my family.
From the Swope Family Estates.
That's a classic photo.
Oh, yeah, God.
So we figure that that's possibly a baptismal photo, because if you see the young kid on the lap of the gentleman in the middle of the photograph, that's a boy. His name is Houston, but he's wearing a baptismal gown.
Right.
And everybody else is very unhappy with borrowed clothing.
Yeah, and they don't look happy at all.
They're not happy. And my grandmother, Minnie, God bless her soul, she's on the left up there, and she's probably the most angriest, scary-looking kid I've ever seen. But that makes the photo even more compelling.
That's a beautiful label and a great photo.
Thank you. Yeah, so this Merlot that you're tasting is a different approach at Merlot. Carbonic macerated 2019 in neutral barrels.
Carbonic macinated.
Macerated.
They're playing Saturday in the beer garden at Hop Monk. Explain what that is, what I just said, what you just said.
Carbonic maceration is...
Thank you.
There's traditional fermentation where the grapes are broke open, and the juice initially is free run against the contact of the skin. On a carbonic macerated version, though, the skin is not broken. It's not gone through a press. It's not gone through any kind of stomping per se, unless they wanted a kind of catalyst. And you put the whole clusters into a sealed chamber with maybe a catalyst of a fermenting wine, maybe a liter of something at the bottom of it. And then you seal it up for 30 days, and you don't touch it. You don't mess with it. And so what happens?
It's called an intercellular fermentation.
Respiration.
So it's anaerobic. It means that the fermentation begins inside each berry. Each berry begins to ferment inside each other.
Do its own thing.
Yeah.
Each
berry.
And
it's such a cool thing. You would dig this because when it's all said and done, you open the vat back up, and you have these whole berries that are fully fermented. And so if you drop those in your mouth, you're popping in some 14% alcohol little jewels, if you will. And if you froze them up and dropped them into a cocktail later on, they'd be pretty cool. Basically, it goes because they burst later on. It doesn't get as much skin contact, so the color is definitely lighter.
Well, you know, I love Merlot. I have for years, and forget about that movie Sideways. And Merlot for a while was in trouble, right, because of the movie Sideways, Dan, right?
A big mistake was made by a lot of people. It's a long involved story, which I've told in print several times, but the bottom line is that a lot of people planted Merlot in the wrong places, made some pretty terrible Merlot, and it gave Merlot a bad reputation, even though the good ones are really, really good.
Well, this is really, really
good. This is a very nice wine.
Yeah.
Very, very dry. It's got a lot of what they call grip. It's got good acidity. This needs a lot of aeration. If you pull a cork on this, put it in a decanter, this would be much better in about an hour and a half, 2 hours. It's really lovely wine.
100% agree with you, Dan. And it does show really well the longer it sits open. We're not releasing this until probably the end of August, maybe either before harvest or just before harvest. For that reason, let it settle out a little bit in the bottle. I pushed it because it's a 2019. I pushed it out of barrel. We're a small winery, so we needed to make some room, but I thought it was good dry.
As far as retail goes, are you guys anywhere? I mean,
that's the filling station in Susan Valley, and then the Napa Deli, and also in Green Valley, and then of course potentially, we're not there yet, potentially at the Manka's Cafe right across the street.
What about Bottle Barn? You need to get into Bottle Barn.
I'd love to get into Bottle Barn. I mean, we're barely 650 cases. We're kind of testing through the process, but it would be fantastic.
We'll talk to Barry Herbst. Part of this show, the wine buyer at Bottle Barn. I got to talk about you being a wine closure expert. Who knew there was such a thing? As Don Huffman is with us. Okay, so first off, how did you become a wine closure expert? And then we'll talk specifically about all the various options on wine closure.
Well, if you remember back some 20 years ago, we had tremendous quality issues that are related to closures in the wine industry.
Yeah.
So that drove Australia to capping everything with screw caps. And that drove the synthetic closure, the alternative closure, the agglomerated closure. All these alternative closures kind of sprung up early on. Many of them died off. One of them that didn't, however, was this company called Nomacork. They made a cork where you could adjust the oxygen. So And I don't mean like a valve on the side of the cork or anything like that, but it's engineered and manufactured specifically to give a winemaker a rifle shot approach to the maturation in the bottle. So that's a lot, right? That says a lot. But ultimately, if you have a Cabernet that needs to breathe, or like Merlot, it does better to be to breathe in the bottle for a little bit longer. I can allow a little bit more oxygen in that with that closure than the closure that I put into that rosé. Keep in mind that rosé was bottled a year and a half ago. It tasted great today, right? Mm-hmm. It showed fresh. Very well. Nice so fresh. There was no sense of reduction that you would normally get with possibly with a screw cap. So Nomacork developed these different things, and before you know it, I have to be able to speak to winemakers about their decisions in choosing different closures. You're talking to marketing, you're talking to winemaking, and then you're talking to educational experts like the SOMs across the world, the Masters of Wine, and before you know it, I'm judging wines with these people, and I've been pointed to as the closure guy in almost every meeting.
How cool is that?
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Your thoughts on screw caps? I mean, we mostly see them on white wines, but
yeah,
I love screw caps.
Screw caps, you really can't beat the convenience factor of a screw cap. I mean, it's really pretty simple.
Yeah.
The challenge is that some winemakers don't really have the ability or don't think through the entire process of bottling their wine. So there are typically, you know, you're talking about a lot more adjustment to headspace. You have a lot more oxygen access to the wine that's in the bottle. So you have to make sure that your wine that you're putting in that bottle has the capacity to absorb that oxygen. Otherwise, you're going to be in trouble. If at the point of bottling, you don't have a good understanding for variations, so you have to be able to double check your headspace to make sure there's no oxygen in it. So it's more complicated than simply putting a cap on it. The other thing to keep in mind is there are two standard liners. One of them is really tight and one of them is a little more open. What we don't know as consumers is we just assume they're all Kleenex. We just assume they're all the Stelvin or the Amcor or whatever. We sell Vintop. That's our brand. But our Vintop brand has two different liners in it. So the two different liners, you can make adjustments. So there's one either really tight or one that allows a little bit more oxygen into it. So you have to think through that. So I don't mind them.
And the winemaking process depends on what you use for your closure. You have to make a decision as you're making the wine.
Ah.
Is this going into a bottle with a cork in it, or is this going
in a screw cap.
And if it's, or it's in a screw cap, or yeah. It's going to be in a synthetic or whatever. You have to make that decision while you're making the wine.
So that the flint-colored bottle that you see over here, we haven't opened yet. You can see the amount of headspace in it, that little bit of oxygen that's in there. So that's I'm managing the maturation of that wine in that bottle with that amount of headspace. If it were a screw cap, that would have that amount of space times four. Because it would be more open inside the cap.
Right.
Now, there are methods for dosing it. You drop a little bit of nitrogen in it, or you blow it off with CO2, or you take a vacuum. There's a lot of processes. But unless you have tools to be able to measure it, you're not really managing your variability.
Do you have another one of these?
I have more in my car. I can give you as many of those as you want. And you're talking about the straps for the back of your
mask. Yeah, because Mike needs one, and then he can show me how it works.
That is a strap that you put on the back of your face mask that keeps the strap off of the backside of your ears.
California Wine Country with Dan Berger, brought to you by Bottle Barn in Santa Rosa. Our guest today is Don Hoffman. He's a partner and winemaker at Rockville Cellars with a bunch of different brands and a bunch of different varieties. DonHuffman.com, H-U-F-F-M-A-N, and on Instagram at Visit a Winery or Rockville Cellars.
Yep, either one of those will work.
Beautiful. And he's a wine closure expert. I love this. So we talked about screw caps. Naturals, we didn't talk much about, but we know what that is. Synthetics.
I have a question about that.
Yeah, please.
Let me ask you, Don. There are very many different types of synthetics that have been tried over the years. Some work a lot better than others. Some work not well at all. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think it's a great combination of both skin texture and then consistency in the center of the cork that really make the Nomacork. That's the only one that really worked because of those two different combinations. So that's it's called co-extrusion. The ones that failed was either 100% foam and didn't have any rebound capability to go inside of the bottle and rebound against the glass because you know as well as anybody that the bottom 3/8 of the glass is the only thing that's really consistent. The rest is molten lava, right? I mean, it's blown into a shape, so it's about as inconsistent as possible. So the advantage a natural cork has, it starts out at 24 millimeters in diameter, and it's able to squeeze into that bottle and spread itself inside those little nuances to the inside of the bottle. Well, so the Nomacork, with the skin development, the co-extrusion development, was able to get a skin that's able to adhere to the side of the glass, be able to pull out like normally, you know, like a normal cork, be able to pull it out when you want it to pull out, and then an interior foam that adds constant pressure to the sides of the glass. There's never any fatigue to those corks. Those, you know, that's the reputation some other corks had, is that there would be a little bit of fatigue and eventually they would relax and they would let oxygen into the bottle, and those were problematic. Nomacork hasn't had that problem in over a decade. They figured that out. So the goal for them, the synthetic corks, was to how to make them more green. So we recognize that fossil fuel is an endless source, and it's inconsistent with our core values as a company. So we started researching other biopolymers, and we found a biopolymer, the most efficient one, is the biopolymer that comes from sugarcane. So sugar is removed from sugarcane, and then the byproduct is molasses, where they can make ethanol, and then from ethanol, polyethylene. And it's a renewable source. It's phenomenal. You've seen it in Pepsi bottles, ketchup bottles, things of that are very food grade, very food safe, and they have a percentage of this green raw material.
They seem not to change at all. It seems like if you held onto one after you pulled it out of the bottle, you held onto it for 5 years, it'd still be the same exact look.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the characteristic that's most desirable to some winemakers. If I opened a 2003 Gary Eberle Cabernet, and one of them was a natural cork and the other one was a synthetic cork, the synthetic cork would have the same integrity it did when it went into the bottle, and the natural cork would be eventually deteriorating. Hmm. You know, it would be eaten alive by the acids and the alcohol that's in the bottle. And so, like any good vintage, you have to do a recorking exercise, right, every 30 or 40 years, because the degradation of the cork itself.
Doesn't affect anybody but me, of course.
Well, of course. By the way, Don, I Googled Rockville Cellars, and I came up with this Rockville Cellars in San Juan Capistrano.
Yeah, so that's my partner's address.
Oh, really?
He's got a home in San Juan Capistrano. That's where we incorporated the name.
Cool.
And so San Juan Capistrano. Yeah, my partner is very interesting. He's got San Juan Capistrano. We're involved in, very involved. He's a retired orthopedic surgeon that invented a few tools for surgery. Owns a home in Bordeaux, not just a home, but a chateau. And I've been there. I asked him what the difference between a home and a chateau in Bordeaux is. And he said, well, you need a turret and a dungeon. And I said, well, okay, where's the turret? Where's the dungeon? And of course, he walked me two floors up from where my room was. And
there
sure
was
enough, there was a turret and there was a dungeon. He has this wonderful estate property in Susan Valley, where we have just about 3.5 acres of estate-grown Cabernet. But we also have from Camus. So Camus also has another 7.5 acres of Cabernet and Petit Verdot that's growing right alongside our stuff. That's going through some new vintages for them. It's exciting.
Very cool. Dan, did you talk about this one?
We haven't yet talked about this wine. This is a Cabernet and Petit Verdot blend.
Come on, you've only been doing this
Cabernet,
5 years.
Sorry.
Get on your
Cabernet Sauvignon
man.
And Petit Verdot blend with a small amount of, believe it or not, Pinot Noir. And the Pinot Noir is one of the most interesting additions because it softens these otherwise pretty aggressive tannins. So it's a pretty nice wine. It needs a lot of time in the bottle. Either that or decant it when it gets open.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. Our wines today, even at 2 years of fermentation in a barrel, it could probably sit another 2 or 3 years in a barrel. It would be just fine. Wow. They have a lot of those things, components going on, but we're bottling it. We recognize it's a young wine, just like that. Right now for sale, we have a 2016 Cabernet, and that one is very green. The second next wine you're going to drink is a 2017 100% Cab, Estate Cab. So this was the Cuvée blend, basically the everything else blend from the estate. So that's the Petit Verdot and the Cab and the Sauv Blanc.
Did we talk about micro natural
We did not.
Yeah, let me fill your glass.
We got to talk about micro natural wine closers.
So micro natural is a brand new category, and I put one of those corks right there in front of you. You see it?
Okay.
So it has the micro natural. You've heard of micro agglomerates. So you've got micro agglomerates, which are cork particles that are glued together with a polyurethane glue. There's a number of brands that are out there that are low cost to very expensive and you know, well developed closures in that category. What we wanted to do is we wanted to remove glue from contact with the wine. We felt like in long-term sensory analysis, we thought that the glue itself, the polyurethane, was just not something that was favorable. It masked a few of those characteristics that you really find desirable in a wine. So we created a micronatural. It's micronatural because the binding agent is actually a natural agent that is a binding agent that holds all the particles together.
They look just like regular wine corks, but...
Yeah. Yeah, it's phenomenal. So it's a 47-millimeter or 52-millimeter cork with a hard edge. It literally... You'd be hard-pressed to be able to see that as being a different closure going into the bottle. And it's 100% TCA removed from the particles before TCA. It's even glued together. TCA, yep.
Trichloroanisole.
That's a cork, and you know, the horrible cork taint that you end up with, right?
Right.
And I have to admit, like, I'm really proud of my my colleagues that are in the natural cork industry because they are working so hard to remove TCA from corks, but those corks are pretty expensive. This micronatural cork is going to come to market probably about a third, maybe under half of the value or cost of those corks that are in there that we're talking about, those ones that are less than a 2% category.
What's the basic material in that cork?
It's cork is the primary
really
raw material.
Cork.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's cork from Portugal, and it's ground-up port cork that's gone through the TCA removal process that you hear so many great things about, the YAM cork or the Vinc cork.
Critical CO2.
Exactly. And then it's extruded. So what the manufacturing process is different. Every other microagglomerate is formed into a shell. It's shoved into a form, if you will. This is extruded like the Noma cork and then cut to length. Process makes it unique and more consistent. It's gone through 2 years of development in Europe, and we're bringing it in. We're happy to bring it in sometime around November, so we'll be there in the springtime.
What's the brand name on that?
Suber. Zuba. So S-U-B-R. The U has a giant umlaut on it.
As in Quercus Suber.
Yeah. It also means closure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Suber with an umlaut. And it's we're excited. We have a few prototypes that used it in 2018 and they've loved it, but we've held it back because we want to go through further testing, and so Europe has just really adapted to it really nicely, and so we're going to jump on that and make it available for spring wines.
Our guest today on California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn, Don Hoffman, partner and winemaker at Rockville Cellars, which is, you know, just part of it. I mean, there's so many brands and varieties they do, and the guy's a wine closure expert, which I just love.
And the wine in front of you is a 2019 Estate Cabernet.
Besides, it's only about 3 years too early before you release, but anyway, this is delicious wine. It's really delicious wine.
Thank you.
But three more years. Come on.
So Dan, lay it down, Berger, would lay this down 3 more years.
Before I even open it. And then I put it away for another
Dan, time. I agree 100%.
This is a good wine.
You know, we hold back. We have a limited allocation.
Pepper.
Pepper.
Just
lots
of pepper. A little white pepper. You like that?
I love that.
I'm living the reality of many small winemakers, is that sometimes you just have to generate some revenue to be able to buy your grapes for the next season. So, you know, there's integrity of wine when you have a whole bunch of money, and then there's, gosh, you know, this is really good. I'm going to release it. It's going to help things out. We think it's going to be good, get some flavors going to people to appreciate, and that's going to generate a little bit of revenue to pay our rent, because I do pay rent, right? And then help pay for the glass and the grapes for the next year.
This is very tasty wine, and it needs a little bit more time, but boy, it's really got flavor. It's got real, honest goodness, varietal components. Obviously, it was spent some time in barrels, but not very much.
20 months in French oak, medium toast French oak.
Nice wine.
When you say medium toast French oak, most of us know the difference between French oak and the other options. Explain that.
So
medium.
Yeah, I mean, imagine, if you will, literally you're toasting a piece of bread, and you've got a 30-second toast, you've got a one-minute toast, and you've got a one-and-a-half toast. The color of the toast comes out almost burnt at one point. That's a heavy toast, where it's just kind of perfect. It's got a little bit of darkness to it, but it's not burnt. That's a medium toast. And if it's coming out just a slightly brown color, it's light toast or no toast.
Gotcha.
In making the barrels, You have to bend the staves. It can be either done with either steam or it can be done with fire. If it's done with fire, you end up with a little fire on the inside of the barrel.
Yeah, it's all about the heat and the bending of the wood. So some people would prefer to bend those dry, and some people use a steam effort, and they feel like both have different attributes for sure.
Don Huffman. You can go to donhuffman.com and on Instagram at visitawinery or at Rockville Cellars. Very cool.
One more wine to go, and this is the most interesting of all wines.
Well, I'm backing off now.
Yeah, this is a treat that if you've never had this wine, you
have to try.
You have to try it.
Even
okay.
just a splash.
All right, give me a splash. I'll taste it.
So I'm cruising through the vineyard in Suisun Valley, and I find an experimental vineyard that has 4 rows wide and by about 600 feet long. And hanging on the grapes is a nearly finished maturated grapes, and it's got a light red skin to it. But I grabbed it and squeezed it, and blood ran from my hands. Not because my hands were cut, but because the grape itself already had red color to it, so unlike any other grape. So I look it up, Elegante Boucher. As it turns out, in the 50s, Elegante Boucher, a hybrid, was created by UC Davis called Ruby Red. And I discovered a small vineyard of Ruby Red, and it happens to be owned by Camus. And Chuck allowed me to pull some grapes out of there and try a new process, a carbonic macerated Ruby Red. And that's what you have in your glass.
This will stain your glass permanently.
Yeah, and our teeth probably.
Absolutely, yeah. You'll have purple teeth for a week. Yeah. You can brush all day long.
I've been there and done that, pal.
Yeah, if you've got polydent in your mouth, you're going to have a problem.
This is called these grapes are called Teinturier grapes. They have red juice, very very rare in the wine business. Almost all red wines are from grapes that come from the vine that have white juice, and the color comes from the skins. In this case, you have this very rare grape called a Teinturier, which has red juice. And this is pitch black on the side of the glass.
I was just going to say that I'm tipping my...
It looks like a grape jelly, looking into the jar of a grape jelly jar. Right?
Yeah, it does.
It's dark, dark, dark color.
And what year is this?
19. So this is the Beaujolais, man. This was just pressed out in August.
So Dan would say, lay this down for like 20 years. And I keep telling him when he says that, Dan, we're not going to be alive in 20 years.
No, I think in this particular case, the fruit of this wine is meant to be drunk soon.
Oh, really?
And because you don't have a lot of fruit left. There's a minimal amount of fruit here to start with. If you age this wine for 20 years, the color would still be fine, but there'd be no flavor.
Yeah. So what do you think? I mean, is it?
I love it. I love it.
There you go.
It's a great wine. Just add sparkling water to it, and you've got a nice drink.
Man, I tell you, you know, you're talking about my history. So I made my first wine in college, and that was back in the 80s. I made a Zinfandel in the basement of our fraternity house, and it was horrible. It was so oxidized.
I bet your brothers didn't care.
My brothers loved it because I had a 5-gallon jug of sangria that went to every home game, and a stack of silo cups. We were good.
Yeah.
This wine is silo cup potential. Again, this whole cluster, drop this into a plastic egg, 100% whole cluster. It's a mess to deal with. It was the last thing we picked. It was picked at about 26 bricks. Way too much, right? At 26 bricks. And then we just carefully, we gingerly dropped it into this giant polyurethane egg, sealed it up 30 days. I opened the tap at the bottom. I swear to goodness, I poured it out at the bottom. I didn't even press it. Didn't even hand press it. I just poured it out of the bottom and put it into a barrel, just like you're tasting.
I'm telling you, sparkling water. Put sparkling water in this stuff is be fabulous.
I'm glad you like it. And this is going to be really, this is another one of those wines. It's, if you're a cook or a chef and you walk into some places, into a fish market in San Francisco, you go, oh my God, what am I going to make? This little cluster of various varieties in Suisun Valley that we've discovered. Seeing this wine, I also made a Corovina Versace blend with Rondinello that is available exclusively at the filling station for them. And that wine is super exciting too. I did bring it for you to taste. But
Don, I don't want to bust your bubble here, but this wine is fabulous as a reduction sauce.
Oh,
this is going to make the greatest reduction sauce in the world. All you need is a half a pound of butter and about a cup of this stuff.
Hell, I carry that in my pocket all the time.
I don't know if you saw me live. I didn't make my face is better for radio than live, but you can tell I don't
look at us.
Yeah, you can tell I don't step away from too many pats of butter. That's for sure.
Yeah. And nor should we.
Exactly.
Is this a butter show or a wine show?
This is delicious wine, by the way. This is really good.
Now, you want more? You're pounding it. I appreciate that, Dan.
It's really delicious wine.
To get a smile out of you on the wine tasting event, I feel pretty thrilled by that.
No, that's very good. It really is. Wow. I want to thank Don Huffman for joining us again. DonHuffman.com.
DonHuffman.com. That's got some political interest. I'm a board member for the Napa County Office of Education. I was a designer for 25 years, had my own company, and so there's a lot of content, but it's an easy email to remember. It's just my name.
Instagram, go to Visit A Winery or Rockville Cellars.
And you can find me also through Vinvention's website, so that's VINVENTIONS if you want more information about closures.
You're an amazing dude.
Did I plug that good?
Did great.
Whammy.
And it's so good to see you. I don't know. I remember the last time.
Well, do you ever do any live remotes? Would you do anything as far away as Solano County? You can come to the filling station and enjoy a good afternoon there if you'd ever want to come by.
I'll just show up with a microphone. We won't be live, but it'll look like it.
That's a good way to get some free cocktails at the filling station. That's perfect.
Don Huffman, thank you, man. Great to see you. Best of everything. Dan Berger, we'll see you next week
with Joel Aiken from the Napa Valley Winemaker.